Welcome back to Half the Battle. I'm your host, as always, Daniel Levy, and today we're going to talk about UFC Vegas 90, the rematch between Brendan Allen and Chris Curtis. And my friends, it's going down this Saturday night live at the Apex in Las Vegas, Nevada. You got two top 10 middleweights. Well, two, one in the top 10, one in the top 15. Brendan Allen being the top 10 one, Chris Curtis being in the top 15. A rematch where, I mean, this is the last time that Brendan Allen lost. And he didn't just lose this fight. He got knocked out in the second round. Lots to talk about there. And both guys have stuck around. Brendan Allen has moved up the rankings. Chris Curtis, I mean, now he's in another main event. So he's been doing his thing too. It's cool to see them run it back, especially with a guy like Brendan Allen, who seems like he's toward at least a title run. And in order for it to really be solidified, why not rematch the guy that knocked you out in your last loss? So I love it, especially for a late replacement when it was initially supposed to be, you know, Brendan Allen versus Marvin Vettori, where, you know, Marvin Vettori is that elite gatekeeper to the top five. You beat Marvin Vettori and you're either getting a title shot or you're moving right in to the thick of things in the UFC middleweight division. So without further ado, my friends,
let's get down to business. Give you one more night to get this. We've had a million, million nights just like this. So let's get down to business.
Give me one more night. All right, so main event of the evening in the middleweight division, we got Brendan All In Allen. He's 23-5, taking on Chris, the Action Man Curtis, who's 31-10. Currently, they got it. Brendan Allen minus 210. The comeback on Chris Curtis is plus 180. So right away, when you look at these odds and you're thinking to yourself, Chris Curtis like easily knocked him out last time. It wasn't much of a fight. Like, why not just go ahead and bet him again at these odds? But let's date back a little bit. So the first time these two gentlemen met was all the way back in 2021. I say all the way back. It wasn't that long ago. So 2 years and change. And since that point with Chris Curtis, it's kind of been hit or miss as far as the results are concerned. But what I want to say is that his fighting style has remained the same this entire time. You know exactly what to expect from Chris Curtis. If you want to pocket box with a guy like Chris Curtis, chances are you're going to lose that fight. And the other chances, you might hit the deck. So engaging in a pocket battle with Chris Curtis, probably not the best idea. While I said that Chris Curtis has kind of been alternating wins and losses since that point, Brendan Allen, on the other hand, has gone on a serious win streak. And now he's at the point where two of his last three fights were main events. The one in between that was a co-main event. So Brendan Allen's getting some good primetime spots his last few fights, and he's been performing. And one thing about Brendan Allen, I've talked about this for a long time, he's had the same style throughout his career, kind of like Chris Curtis has had his same style throughout his career. The thing with Brendan Allen is, for his style to effectively work at the highest level, I've said it for a long time, when he was trying to do that stuff as a purple belt, you know, in LFA, that's when you saw Eric Anders and Fluffy Hernandez kind of break Brendan Allen down the stretch in fights. Whereas now that he's a black belt, he's so much more confident on the mat. He's so much more dominant. And Brendan Allen gets on top of you, and the fight could be over shortly after. I mean, we saw what happened when he got on top of Andre Muniz, serious black belt. We're talking about a black belt and Andre Muniz that submitted Jacare. Brendan Allen submitted Muniz. The Paul Craig fight. Paul Craig, most submissions, or at least top two most submissions in light heavyweight history, drops to middleweight, where he's going to be the larger man. Brendan Allen goes out there and chokes him out too. So, but here's the big talking point. I know. I'm not going to leave out the fact that Chris Curtis's takedown defense has astronomically improved since his days in the PFL on the regional scene back when Bilal outgrappled him, in their fight. So, man, Chris Curtis, his takedown defense has come a long way since he's made it to the UFC. So I do think he's going to stuff takedowns here. My only thing is, if he slips one time, if he gets a kick caught, if Brendan straight up gets a takedown, or Brendan gets a body lock and just pulls him into back control. Like, I'm not saying Curtis doesn't have good defense. I'm just saying Brendan is different when he gets on top, especially with the confidence he has now. He's very long. He can lock in that body triangle, go for rear naked chokes. And if he just gets you on top, you know, in terms of like full mount, his ground and pound is pretty devastating. It's just when you go back and you watch that first fight between Brendan Allen and Chris Curtis, something that needs to be said is that while I love the skills of Brendan Allen, I have to admit, and I mean this with all due respect, I don't know the guy as a person, but from what I can tell inside the octagon, watching this guy fight throughout the years, the guy ain't the brightest, and the guy does kind of let his ego get the best of him sometimes. For example, that last fight he had with Chris Curtis, the whole time, because you guys know the backstory, Sean Strickland, training partner of Chris Curtis, also fought Brendan Allen, and he also knocked him out in the second round. Those are Brendan Allen's only two losses to the two teammates, Sean Strickland and Chris Curtis, and both of them knocked him out in the second round, close to the same time. Curtis was a minute 58 seconds into round two. Strickland was a minute 32 into round two. So they basically did the same thing. But one interesting thing, so I was talking about how Brendan Allen, his ego might get the best of him from time to time. If you pull up that last fight that him and Brendan Allen and the Brendan Allen Chris Curtis fight, the last one, Sean Strickland is talking massive shit in the corner. Like, dude, to the point where, like, you know, we're at the apex, the fans aren't there, so you can hear everything. And like, Sean was talking the kind of shit where, like, Brendan in the middle of the fight isn't like focusing on the fight. He's like smiling, looking off to Sean Strickland, who's in the corner, talking shit to him. They're laughing, they're being cute. And like, if you want to be cute against Chris Curtis, you're probably going to hit the deck again. But what I'm hoping is the fact that this guy's been on a 6-fight win streak since then, it's been 2 years and some change since then, I'm hoping he can show me a little bit of maturity, because the blueprint to beat Chris Curtis has been out there for years. It used to be you take him down and grind him out, but if you want to beat him on the feet, the way to do that is do not box with this guy in the pocket. Keep it on the outside, run away, kick, frustrate him, make him be like, why doesn't this guy want to bang with me? Make him get to his crybaby state, which we know when Chris Curtis doesn't get his way, whether it's in a fight, whether it's the judges, whatever the case may be, guy puts on a temper tantrum. You know, if you don't fight him in the pocket, Jack Hermanson wanted to run around the ring and pick his shots. Brendan Allen can do the same thing. It's just that there's 5 rounds. And in 5 rounds, it's hard to trust Brendan Allen at a minus 210 price tag when you know that the guy ain't the brightest. He's been knocked out by this man before. And this is the definition of a letdown spot. Initially, Brendan Allen was supposed to fight Marvin Vettori. And I really thought that he wins that, he's a fight away for a title shot. And I really liked that matchup for him because I thought he was catching Vettori at the perfect time. Here, though, while I am leaning towards Allen, and I'll tell you why, because I think since the time they fought, he's made the more improvements. He's the guy that's been evolving. He's the guy that's making his way up towards, you know, I'm not saying he's going to win a belt, but I'm saying don't write off the possibility of 2 more wins and he gets a title shot. Whereas Chris Curtis, you know, he's going to be a stalwart. He's going to kind of be like a gatekeeper into the top 15. If you're not quite ready for the top 15, Chris Curtis, I mean, whether it's a body shot, whether it's something upstairs, like the guy will make you pay. And he's very good at hurting people. So it's a really interesting matchup. I think from a betting perspective, it's a dog or pass situation. But let me say this, pure pick, I'm going to go Brendan Allen. But I'd be remiss if I left this out. Although Brendan Allen is on that 6-fight win streak and he has been making improvements, there's still been some sketchy moments in these fights. The Sam Alvey fight, early in that fight, Sam Alvey was getting off. The Bruno Blindado fight, early in that fight, Bruno Blindado was getting off on some big shots. Like, Brendan backs himself into the cage and his striking offense has made big improvements, but striking defense, and then feel like his confidence starts to wilt a little bit when he starts eating these big shots. So it's really about approach and coming in here smart. If Brendan's going to fight with his ego and you notice that right off the bat, I'd move in on a Chris Curtis live bet. But if you start to see Brendan Allen not take any unnecessary risk, not get distracted by Sean Strickland talking all kinds of shit in the corner and just stays focused on his game plan, I don't care if these guys are booing you for running away. I don't care about any of that. Like, hey, let's get him with the body kicks. Let's circle, throw straight punches. Do not engage in any pocket exchanges. If we get our opportunity to get him to the ground, go for it. I think Brendan Allen has more ways to win. It's just that he's not the most trustworthy guy, especially at a price like this. And you know he's capable of a stunt. So that's what you got to be worried about. But if that stunt doesn't happen, I see Brendan Allen out-voluming Chris Curtis. And if he can get on top, there's a chance he might do some serious damage. So definitely going to be paying attention to this one. I'm going to pick Brendan Allen. Co-main event of the evening in the featherweight division. We got Alexander Hernandez. He's 14-7, taking on Damon the Leech Jackson, who's 22-6. Currently, they got it. Alexander Hernandez minus 190. The comeback on Jackson is plus 165. So y'all know how I felt about Alex Hernandez throughout his career. I think that, you know, the first couple minutes of every fight, the guy's explosive. The guy's dynamic. He's knocked out some real people. Beneil Dariush. Granted, that was one of the biggest flukes in the history of the sport. But the guy has been proved. Anytime a fight goes past round one, shit gets sketchy. So I don't see why it'd be any different here. Yes, he could obviously starch Damon early. Damon has been starched early more than once against Topuria, the champ, against the Russian in PFL. So Movlid. But Damon Jackson, they call him the leech, because as fights progress, he tends to hang on to you for a bit. If he can get that body triangle in, he can break guys. And that fight he had with Billy Q was a straight up dogfight. Round one, I mean, he was hitting Billy Q's head like a speed bag, man, that first round. And there were times when he took his back, flattened him out, and like, you know, Billy Q was willing to fight until the bitter end. And the big thing about it was, you put Alexander Hernandez in similar spots and he's gonna look for the door. And people are trying to say that he looks so much better in his Algio fight. Guys, Algio is not like a finishing threat. Algio likes to throw little soft taekwondo kicks, run around the ring, no knockout threat whatsoever. And Bill Algio was out there hurting Alex Hernandez. And I mean, I've been done with Hernandez since day one. It's funny, I actually gave him a chance in the Algio fight. Reason being was Algio has a history of losing to talented flicks. Feely, Ricardo Ramos. So I was like, oh, you know, maybe Alex Hernandez, another talented flick, maybe he can lose to him. Nope. Fight goes past round one and people trying to say that Alex's best round was the third and stuff. Let's pull up, let's see what the stats say regarding Alex's best round being the third. Let's see if that's actually true. It is true. However, the output, let's not sit here and act like the output was so high in round three that it was like, wow, this is a brand new man and this and that. Like, Alexander Hernandez will always be a front runner, whereas Damon Jackson, kind of that long, lanky, awkward, seasoned vet that you show him some kind of weakness, man, he will drag you into those deep waters. And I know that he's had his fair share of cardio issues too. But like, you look at that Mirsad Bektik fight, I kind of view this the same thing. I mean, Mirsad Bektik, way like Damon Jackson's completely athletically outmatched in that fight, kind of like he might be here. But Damon Jackson was able to drag Mirsad Bektik into those deep waters, eventually finish the fight. I think he can do a similar thing here. It's just contingent on not getting starched early. We know that's a possibility, but that does not happen. Anytime an Alexander Hernandez fight has gone past round one, shit has gotten sketchy. I can name you all the examples, but longtime fans that have to battle, y'all been listening to me. You guys know all the examples. Just look it up. Anytime he's been past round one, shit's gotten sketchy. So get me past round one, Damon, and let's see what happens. So I'm going to go Damon Jackson here for the upset. Featured bout in the featherweight division. We got a matchup between Chepe Mariscal. He's 15-6, taking on Morgan Charrier, who's 19-9. Currently, they got it. Morgan Charrier, minus 115. The comeback on Jose Chepe Mariscal is minus 105. But it just depends where you look, because I do see some dog odds on Chepe in certain books. So it just depends. But yeah, I like this fight a lot, man. I mean, two guys that are, you know, kind of considered journeymen on their regional scenes, but they've been paying their dues for so long, and now they're meeting inside the UFC's octagon. I would definitely say Morgan Charrier is the more athletic guy. He's probably the harder hitter. He's more of a physical presence, but his output is on the lower side, and people will mention, oh, a lot of his losses were close decisions to tough competition. Okay, I won't debate that, but a lot of his wins are close decisions to like bad competition. And let me tell you something else. That debut opponent that Morgan Charrier fought in his UFC debut, like the guy Manolo, it reminded me of that. It was like,
Manolo, shoot that piece of chip.
No.
Manolo, shoot that piece of shit. I was like, dude, if that Manolo guy ever fights in the UFC again, he will be faded with a quickness. Like, that was literally, like, I can bring that guy into the NFC right now. He'll go 0-2, right? Like this is not a guy that can come in here and win our belts. Like, that's how bad that Zucchini guy was. That was bad. Whereas Chepe, the two studs he's fought, I mean, Trevor Peak might not be your conventional definition of a stud, but we like guys that fight like Trevor Peak, always will. And then the other fight against Jenkins, people can only remember that Jenkins got injured in that fight. But two things regarding that. Number one, Jenkins got injured by what Chepe did. Chepe's got a nasty judo background. He hit him with a nasty throw and dude got injured as a result. That was not the guy came into the fight with this bad injury, and if he just moved it, a centimeter, it was going to pop out. Nah, dog, that was a heavy, heavy judo throw. Made him land right on it. And that injury is caused by Chepe. But my other point is Chepe was dominating him that entire fight up until then. So people try to act like, is this fluke injury? Bullshit. Chepe was dominating that entire fight. And then he finished him with that move. Like, if you throw someone and they break their arm, like, what is that, your fault? Like, come on, dog. That ain't no fluke. So as far as this was not like that Estella Nunes fight where she tried to, brace her fall, kind of like the Shogun versus Mark Coleman fight, won in Pride. Shout out to the legend, Mark Coleman. Love that you overcame that. And also shout out to the legend, Mauricio Shogun. But bottom line, I don't think that Chepe should be discredited for what he did to Jack Jenkins at all. And on his regional scene, I mean, he's got wins over guys like Yusuf Zalal, wins over guys like Pat Sabatini, who are currently in the UFC doing their thing. And his losses are to respectable guys for the most part, Joe Anderson Brito. Yeah, I know it was a brutal KO, but Joe Anderson Brito is perfectly capable of dishing out brutal KOs. The Soriano fight, okay, maybe don't give him a pass there, but there's like 9 losses on Morgan Charrier's career. You're going to give him a pass for all of those? So I'm just saying it's 2 kind of journeymen meeting inside the octagon. They paid their dues for years. Morgan, the more athletic, more powerful guy, but Chepe got that dog in him, and Morgan fights super close. So I see it being a split decision type fight. I'm going to go with Chepe. Hopefully the judge's favor is just willingness to go forward, his willingness to exchange, to throw caution to the wind, and let's see if he can get his desired outcome. I'm going to pick Chepe here for the upset. Now, next up in the lightweight division, we got a matchup between Ignacio Bahamondes. He's 14-5, taking on Christos Giagos, who's 20-11. Currently, they got it. Ignacio -330. The comeback on Christos Giagos is +270. So I love betting on Ignacio Bahamondes, but listen, it's been hit or miss. It was miss against Magdessi and miss against Ludovic Klein. But listen, man, I'll give him a pass for that, for both. One was a debut stunt in the Ludovic fight. Have y'all seen the transformation Ludovic Klein has had recently? You look at I haven't looked recently at the drug test list of who they've tested more and stuff, but a few weeks back they had more drug tests on that Carlos Vera guy, the one that fought Rinya Nakamura, that kept, that 36-year-old dude with love handles that kept flopping to his back like every 30 seconds. They've drug tested that guy more than they've drug tested Ludovic Klein. So yeah, I don't really hold that loss against Ignacio. Look, I know Ignacio is hittable, and I know there might be some questions. He's a young kid, but I think he's got a lot of talent. I love his stance switching. I love his arsenal of strikes. I like the range. I like the toughness. I like the opportunistic submission ability too. I like who he's working with. I mean, his main training partner is the number one contender in the welterweight division, Bilal Muhammad. Whereas with Christos Giagos, I just consider him an athletic journeyman. He's a guy that, if you do not belong in the UFC, Christos Giagos is going to expose that. But if you do belong in the UFC, you're going to get past Christos. Look, Christos hits very hard. He's a threat in the first round. But after that, he kind of runs out of ideas. Like, there's only so many times where you can just spam a left hook or spam an overhand right every 30 seconds or mix in the occasional takedown. But there's not much depth to his game. But I respect him. Again, athletic journeyman that stayed around the UFC, and he's a good prospect tester. So similar to how my boy Zell Huber took care of business, I expect Ignacio Bahamondes to really frustrate Christos with his range. And I don't know if it's going to be a finish or not, but I do expect dominance past round one. Now, next up in the heavyweight division, we got a matchup between the debut of Walter Walker. He's 11-0, taking on Lukasz Brzeski, who's 8-4. Currently, they got it. Walter Walker. Walter Walker. Walter Walker is -260. The comeback on Lukasz Brzeski is +225. So I'm sure a lot of y'all have heard that Walter Walker, that name is so funny, is the brother of Johnny Walker, right? So you think, oh man, I can't wait to see these flying knees. I can't wait to see this crazy athleticism, that vertical jump. And you look at the physical attributes. He's 6'6" with the 81-inch reach. So you're thinking, only 26 years old, you're thinking like, okay, my man, like, you're about to come in here and make waves, 11-0 record. So when I was getting ready to watch him, I was like, man, I cannot wait to see what this guy does. Is this guy going to jump off the cage, like double flying knees, Superman punches, the whole bit, just like his brother? Nope. Guy fights nothing like his, like nothing like his brother. So you'd consider Johnny Walker to kind of be like a opportunistic, flashy, dangerous knockout artist, right? Walter Walker is a grinder. He's the polar opposite of Johnny Walker. This is a guy who's going to come in there. He's a little bit on the slower side. He's good at mixing in those takedowns, and he's good at grinding guys out. And that's what you need here against Lukasz Brzeski. You know, when you look at Brzeski's last couple fights, and firstly, he is a USADA victim. Now there's no USADA, so let's see if he comes in there and pulls an OSP or a Weidman, you know, or something like that. But like, the thing about it is, you know, he gave up 8 takedowns to my boy Carl Williams. I'm not saying he's going to give up 8 here, but I mean, what, 4 or 5 ain't out the question. 3 ain't out the question. And then his following fight just got starched. His body's been shrinking since, you know, since the drug testing came in. And I'd like to look at that list and see if he's been drug tested since the new program has been implemented. So, yeah, I mean, like Brzeski, I just kind of see it like a pleasure man situation. He's just one of these guys that, for whatever reason, people love to bet him every fight because he beat Martin Boudet and got robbed. Like, dude, like all of us fell asleep during that fight. Like, stop. Carl gave him a tour of the octagon. Waldo knocked him out. I mean, I don't see, you know, why Walter Walker is not going to come out here and grind this guy out. So, yeah, I'm going to go Walter Walker here via wrestling-based decision or ground and pound. Does he have any submissions? Does my boy go for subs? Nah, he rarely does. So ground and pound or decision for Walter Walker is my official pick. Now, next up in the lightweight division, we got a matchup between Trevor Peak. He's 9-1, taking on Charlie Campbell, who's 8-2. Currently, they got it. Charlie Campbell, -185. The comeback on Trevor Peak is +155. So Peak Nation, stand up. You know what I'm saying? Peak Nation, stand up. Have y'all seen that picture of me and Trevor Peak? I fucking love Trevor Peak. You know, I'm biased. I mean, we're not like boys or nothing like that, but I just like dudes that fight how he fights. You know, he might not be the most athletic. He might not be the most technically sound, but the guy is going to go for it. And the guy is going to throw the kind of strikes that like standing hammer fit. It reminds me of the Braves chop. The thing about this matchup, though, is Charlie Campbell, he kind of reminds me of like a young green Clay Collard. And when Clay Collard first came to the UFC, he had a great fight with Max Holloway, a good fight with Gabriel Benitez, but he kind of went like on a 1-3 run. And he had a, you know, they had to give him the boot because he wasn't quite ready. I mean, he had a very exciting fighting style, but it was just a little bit green. And I like Charlie a lot. Like, I think he's dynamic. I think he goes for it. I love everything about him. I still think he's kind of green. The good news for him here is that Charlie Campbell is going to be the far more technically sound guy. Thing is, he goes for it to a point where he leaves a lot of openings, and you see much slower, ploddier, way less skilled, way less athletic guys like Chris Duncan, you know, who's on the brink of death's doorstep, go out there and sleep Charlie Campbell. So I'm curious about what happens if Charlie Campbell gets extended past round one, man. Like I just really think that he's talented. I think he can strike for real, but I think that he's also super untested, super green, and needs some seasoning. And if this fight gets past round one, because look, I know in round one, the speed difference, the technique difference, I know that. Listen, Charlie's probably going to be getting off in round one. We can accept that. We can all agree on that. Thing is, if he does not get Trevor Peak out of there and Trevor hasn't been badly compromised up until that point, I think Trevor can start to pin this guy up against the fence, mix in some Matt Brown elbows, maybe get him down to the mat, roughneck him a little bit, make it a dirty fight. Take away who's the better fighter, and let's get into a battle of heart. Let's get that, you know, that Billy Q heart test. If Trevor Peak can give him that heart test, I think Trevor Peak's a live dog. It's just this first round, there's a chance that Trevor Peak is going to take significant damage. So that's what makes it interesting to me. So if Charlie just comes out here, just steamrolls him in round one, he covers this price tag. But if he has a very successful round one, starts to slow down a little bit, starts to go to deep waters that he hasn't experienced before, that's where I think Trevor Peak can possibly take over. So, you know, it's a biased pick, but I'm going to go Trevor here to take over late. Now, before we talk about the prelims, I got to give a huge shout out to today's sponsor, Betting Hero. I want to let y'all know that I've partnered with Betting Hero to get you guys the best sportsbook offers in the U.S. This week's offer is bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets by Bet365 Sportsbook. To get this offer, click the link in the description below. And guys, at Bet365, they don't do ordinary. They believe that every sport should be epic. Every fight, every round, every punch, from the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 and up only, must be present in AZCOINIAKYLANCNJOH or VA. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or 1-800-BETS-OFF. Terms and conditions apply. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. One of my favorite Bet365 features is their parlay boost, which means you get up to an extra 70% on your payout. It's available 24/7, 365 to new and existing users. They have it for all major sports, but most importantly, for y'all, they have it for MMA. The eligible markets for the boost are fight winner and fight outcome, which is perfect for this weekend and UFC 300. Get ahead of the game. Join using the link in the description to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. So shout out my Betting Hero sponsoring today's episode of the show. Make sure you take advantage of their Bet365 offer this week, and hopefully it can help you all out. Now, next up in the welterweight division, we got a matchup between Alex Morano, who's 23-9, taking on Court McGee, who's 21-12. Currently, they got it. Alex Morano, minus 290. The comeback on Court McGee is plus 240. And this really reminds me of when I max bet Alex Morano against Josh Burke. And yeah, Court McGee and Josh Burkman might not fight alike, but they have a similar quality. 40 years old. Well, Josh was like 40 back then. Court's the 40-year-old now. Alex Morano, really good at getting established seasoned veterans who are on their way out of there, like he did to Burkman, like he did to Tim Means, and like I think he's going to do to Court McGee this week. And all respect to Court McGee, one of two fighters in UFC history that's died and come back to life. Shout out to the immortal Matt Brown, who actually just knocked out Court McGee in North Carolina. I was at that fight. And with Court McGee, it's like this. At this point in his career, look, the guy still is a grinder. I mean, he's going to try to push you up against the fence. He's going to try to kill clock. He throws some volume on the feet, but it is so slow to a point where, I mean, Alex Morano throws some haze, man. And I think Alex Morano is going to come out here. And I actually think Alex Morano gets a first round finish, man. I think that Court McGee's seen better days. And despite the fact that, like I said earlier in the show, you know, some of these 40-year-olds, you know, with the no USADA testing, you saw Weidman get a win. You saw OSB get a win. I just don't think that Court McGee's going to continue that trend, man. I think that Alex Morano throws way too hard with way too vicious intent. I think he's going to be the faster man here. And I think that if he does get taken down, just like in the Tim Means fight, I think he can pop back up. I'm curious if he tries to go for his guillotine here. That's going to be kind of hard to submit Court McGee. But at this point in Court McGee's career, I wouldn't put it past Morano to drop him, jump on his neck, or drop him and finish the fight. So I'm going Alex Morano to finish Court McGee. And should it go the distance? I mean, I think Alex Morano wins that too. So yeah, Alex Morano does really well with guys that are kind of, you know, towards the twilight of their career. And I think he's going to show that here. I think he's going to shine. And it's going to be sad to see Court McGee lose another one, probably by finish in the first round. Now, next up in the bantamweight division, we got a very intriguing matchup between the former champ, Jermaine Durandamy. She's 10-4, taking on Norma Dumont, who's 10-2. Currently, they got it. Norma Dumont, minus 150. The comeback on Jermaine Durandamy is plus 135. And it just depends where you look, because I do see some plus 155s on Jermaine as well. But the bottom line is this, and I think people have made very good points throughout the week. If this was a few years ago, I mean, shit, Jermaine would be the favorite here. And maybe there's an argument for her to be the favorite even without the four-year layoff. I mean, I get the baby talk. I get 39 years old. But then you got to take into account that Norma Dumont's got the OnlyFans. I heard the OnlyFans fade like even Trump's retirement fights. Look at Marina Moroz and Joanne Calderwood. Joanne Calderwood was retiring. Usually retirement's the ultimate red flag. Nope. Marina having an OnlyFans surpassed that. Norma's got an OnlyFans. But I've seen champs come back after 4 years and do great, even win belts, GSP against Bisping. I'm not comparing the two. I'm just saying when you're one of the greats, it's possible. And when I talk about Jermaine being one of the greats, for some of you noobs, wins over Larissa Pacheco, the PFL champ, wins over Raquel Pennington, the current UFC champ, wins over Holly Holm, the former UFC champ, and wins over Juliana Pena, the former UFC champ. So when you talk about these resumes, they can't even be compared. And Norma Dumont's been dropped in fights against Megan Anderson, of all people, against Carl Hossa. I like Carl Hossa, but like, this is just a different caliber, my man. And like, the thing is that Jermaine Durand and me, she's been out for 4 years or so. Like, if you round up, she's been out 5 years. Cinco años.
We haven't heard a word from you in 5 years. Cinco años.
That's a long ass time, but the only way Dumont can win this fight is extended top control. But I feel like, well, at least in 2020, Jermaine was getting a lot better about that thing. I mean, about that, you know, like choking out Juliana Pena, stuffing all the takedowns against Rocky. Like, I think that she's shown massive improvements everywhere. It's just we don't know where she's at now, but she's still a serious athlete. She's still a championship level fighter. And this is a massive step down. So look, she might just come out looking flat. It's been 4 years and all that, but like, this is like even 70% of the Jermaine that we once knew and loved. I love me some Norma Dumont. I know a lot of us do, but yeah, I think that Jermaine Durand and me might have a little something for her. So I'm going to go with the former champ here. Now, next up in the bantamweight division, we got a matchup between Victor Hugo. He's 24-4, taking on Pedro Falcao, who's 16-3. So guys, this fight literally got announced 5 minutes before I did the podcast. So I haven't had the adequate time to research it. So I'm not going to give you a pick on it, but I'll tell you what I know about these guys. And I believe there's no odds yet. Yeah, there's no odds on this yet. So Victor Hugo, people like to consider him a leg lock guy because he does have 8 wins or 9 wins by submission. But he's also got 8 wins by knockout, 7 wins by decision. And he's got a good ratio in all those. He's 8-2 to the KO, 9-1 to the sub, 7-1 to the decision. So Victor Hugo coming into the UFC with a 24-4 record. I mean, that's the kind of experience you like to see. And kind of like a Nursultan Rozyboyev guy. Like, maybe they don't fight the same, but they're coming into the UFC vastly experienced, and you can just throw them in there in tough fights right away. And with Pedro Falcao, what I do know about him is this guy's not a spring chicken. He trains out of Novo Niao, the gym responsible for the great Jose Aldo. He's beat UFC vets. He's beat tough. Wait. Leonardo Morales did not win tough, but he fought, I believe, Yair in the finals of the Ultimate Fighter. No. Yeah. He fought Yair in the finals, and then he fought Tekko right after that. Yeah, you know, this kid's got wins over UFC vets, you know, not just Leonardo Chimmy, but also Yarde Santos. And, you know, he's beat, like, what I'm trying to say is that he's beat the guys he's supposed to beat on the regional scene, and he's been fighting pro since 2011. So this is not some guy that's like 5-0 and they're calling him to be a lamb to slaughter. It's just that I literally got texted about this fight 5 minutes before I went, you know, and started recording. So, I'm not exactly sure how they match up yet. So get back to me on that. Once I do a little more research on that, I'll give you all a pick, I promise. And let me know who y'all got in that fight down below. Now, next up in the strawweight division, we got a matchup between Cynthia Calvillo. She's 9-6-1, taking on Piera Rodriguez, who's 9-1. Currently, they got it. Piera Rodriguez -130. The comeback on Cynthia Calvillo is +110. So, I mean, basically the way I view this fight, gentlemen, is that Cynthia Calvillo is on her way out. And I know she's on like a 5 or 6 fight skid. And I know some of those fights, oh, she showed a little life against Loopy. Guys, you got to understand that Loopy, there's something Loopy upstairs fighting Verna Jandjidova. And like, let's not get on top of Verna Jandjidova. Let's go for a leg lock on Verna Jandjidova. Like, remember when the whole thing was like, I'm going to stand and bang with Paul Daly. And you'd be like Jonah Hill, like cut. The new I'm going to stand and bang with Paul Daly is I'm gonna go leg lock for leg lock with Verna Jandjidova. So the fact that like Cynthia went to a split with this girl who, you know, her brain is kind of loopy, like people are building it up too much. And the bottom line is like, after all these losses, where's your confidence at? And in some of those losses, she was quitting on the stool. She's going to split decisions with retired fighters. You know, that fight with her and Nina Nunes seemed like two soccer moms in there. And it hurts my feelings to say that, because at one point, Cynthia Calvillo was thought to be, listen, for some of y'all noobs, you're going to laugh when I say this, but y'all that have been around the game as long as I have, remember when people were comparing Cynthia Calvillo, saying she'd be the next Ronda Rousey. I know some of y'all remember that have been around the game a while. And it just seems like, you know, she had her run. She did her thing. She got some good wins under her belt, but I don't know what it is. I don't know if she had a health issue. I don't know. I really just don't know, but she just has not looked the same. The confidence isn't there. She's not fighting optimally. She's not pursuing her biggest advantages in fights anymore. You know, Pierre Rodriguez, I don't think Pierre is anything special, but I think that at least Pierre has some hunger in her. I think that Pierre at least can put up some decent volume. You know, isn't the easiest to hit. You know, maybe the takedown defense needs a little bit of work, but she's gotten better offensively landing takedowns too. You know, hit 5 against Sam Hughes and getting submitted by Jillian Robertson, who's got the most submissions in the history of that weight class. I don't put much stock into that. I think at this point, Jillian would also submit Cynthia. Not a confident pick, because at their best, Cynthia is the better fighter, but Cynthia hasn't been at her best in since before the pandemic, you know? So yeah, dog, I'm gonna go with Pierre Rodriguez just on the youth and just a little more vigor. I'm not laying that price, I'll tell you that right now. And next up in the bantamweight division, we got the debut of Gene Matsumoto. He's 14-0, taking on Dan Argueta, who's 9-1. So Matsumoto from Brazil, does he have like a Japanese background, or I don't mean to like be like, you know, generalizing, but that's definitely a Japanese name, right? Or is it something else? Because you've been seeing a lot of Brazilian fighters with like interesting last names. The kid that fought Elvis Brenner had like some like Polish or Swedish last name. Lipsky, that's not a Brazilian last name. Like, so yeah, it's interesting like how people from all parts of the world migrated to Brazil. You'd love to see it. And with this kid, Gene Matsumoto, he's 14-0, but he's very green. But he's got a lot of talent. Kind of reminds me of like, kind of has that like Thomas Almeida thing going on, but like his weakness isn't his chin like Thomas. His weakness is his takedown defense. But man, like when he starts letting his hands go, he gets nasty in there and he walks guys down. He mixes it up to the body. I do like his combinations. Just something that's hard to cap about these kind of cards compared to like upcoming with 300, when you're way more familiar with their fighters and how they perform at this level. It's just the fact that like, this kid is green. He's been taken down by not the best fighters, but you also can't measure what kind of improvements they're going to make fight to fight, because the kid's only 24 years old. He's just a kid. But I know what Dan Argueta is. Dan Argueta, firstly, he's absolutely jacked. He's a nasty wrestler. He's experienced. Even though he doesn't have as many pro fights as Matsumoto, he's fought significantly better competition than Matsumoto. He's been 5 rounds before. He's taken his wins in the UFC. He's taken his losses. Like, I respect the kid a lot. The way I see them matching up is I think that Dan Argueta is going to have a really good first round. I think that Dan Argueta is going to get his wrestling off in that first round. But from there, that's where things become interesting. So people talk about Dan Argueta's good cardio. And I think in the Jackson fight, he did show good cardio, especially in that third round. But in the Miles Johns fight, it was the opposite. Because sometimes when you go balls to the wall in that early going, like you watch that Ronnie Lawrence fight, and I consider that a win. But like, had Ronnie Lawrence escaped all that? I mean, he never actually tapped, but had Ronnie Lawrence been able to escape all that and get into the second round, I'm curious if Argueta would be able to push that same pace. But you cannot deny the grappling chops of Argueta and the physicality. The guy is strong. The guy can wrestle. And I fully expect him to get takedowns in this fight. It's just my big question is, when he kind of runs Matsumoto through the series, is it a case where he's going to go out there and finish him? Is it a case where he's going to demoralize him, out grapple him for 2 of the 3 rounds? Or is it a case where he blows his load in round 1, round 2 and 3, Matsumoto can kind of come out there, pick him apart a bit? So yeah, that's a tough one for me. It's definitely a dog or pass situation at the window, but I'm a slightly lean with Matsumoto. I think he's got more upside, but you know, you can't write off the possibility of a debut stunt. How many times have you seen those? So, like, super talented kids that go on to have really bright futures, for whatever reason, pull stunts in their debut. So maybe that happens here, especially with the wrestling advantage that Argueta has. But I just think that if Matsumoto can weather this early storm on the mat and survive, then I think on the feet, he's going to start to really make Argueta wilt, start to make him fatigue, start to dig into the body and edge out 2 of the rounds. So we'll see. It should be a close fight. And I think it's It's probably a dog or pass situation. Middleweight division, we got a matchup. Dylan Butka, he's 7-2, taking on Cesar Almeida, who's 4-0 currently. They got it. Dylan Butka, minus 150. The comeback on Cesar Almeida is plus 130. So something that's interesting about this fight is that Dylan Butka had literally the worst fight on Contender Series history. But he impressed Dana with the sole fact that he was in there with a much larger guy, and he was able to kind of just dog him a bit, push him up against the fence, get those last-minute takedowns, whatever the case may be. But Dana also said, hey, man, you seem kind of small for 85s. We'd like to get you with the people from the PI and see if you can make 70s. Obviously, that's not happening. This fight's at 85s. And with Cesar Almeida, you guys have already probably heard that he's had three fights with Poatan. You know, he beat him once and he lost to him twice. But the fact that he fought him three times shows that he's on a decent kickboxing level. And what I liked about his Contender Series fight, even though he did get taken down a good bit of time, he was able to get back up. And from there, he's able to land his damage. It's just that I think Dylan Butka is a better wrestler than the guy that that Cesar fought on Contender Series. But it's tough because Cesar is also 10 times better than that fucking, what was it, a South African guy that just looked so bad in that fight. That Chad Hanekom or some shit. Dude, that was bad. That was real bad. So this is a tough one for me to call. I can kind of see Dylan Butka grinding him out, but I can also see Butka grinding him out at times, taking him down. But Cesar works his way back up, starts firing some body shots, maybe some leg kicks, starts getting his jab going. Then the takedowns start to be a little bit harder to come by. Then Cesar can start really turning up in the latter rounds. So it could either be that or it could be the Butka grind. It's going to be one of the two, right? Now watch it be like a Butka head kick KO. Now that I just said that, nah, but yeah, man, I'm going with Cesar to kind of pick up the momentum late, break Butka, but kind of just finesse him on the feet after overcoming the early grappling scares. So that's kind of how I see it. Bantamweight division, we got Melissa Mullins. She's 6-0, taking on Nora Cornole, who's 7-1. Currently, they got it. Melissa Dixon minus 350. The comeback on Nora Cornole plus 285. So Melissa Dixon is serious on the mat. I mean, she can go out there, take these girls down, finish them. She can also overcome bad spots like in that fight against Russian Ronda. I was very impressed with her resilience and her resolve in that Russian Ronda fight. Like the first round was kind of sketch, but she really picks it up as the rounds progress. That fight she had against Lesnikova, took an ass whooping up front, takes her down one time. The fight was over shortly after. So she's going to need to tighten up some things on the feet, but grappling wise, she's pretty damn dominant. And with Nora Cornole, I'd say that she's probably got the striking edge here and she's decently well-rounded, but there's a level difference on the mat here between the two of them. Now, listen, if Melissa Dixon, you know, she just got her first UFC win under her belt. She's feeling herself. She's being a little cocky. Thinks she can abandon the strategy here, the game plan. And he wants to bang with Nora Cornole. Probably not the best recipe for success. But if she plays this smart, bides her time on the feet a little bit, chill, chill, chill. Get her to the ground. Kill, kill, kill. So I'm going to go Melissa Dixon to win this fight. Let's talk about the fight to watch and the fighter to watch. So what is the fight to watch? Fight to watch is Trevor Peak versus Charlie Campbell. I mean, these two are going to stand and bang until one man falls. Standing hammer fist, spins, high kicks, flying knees, everything you expect from two brawlers that are looking to make a statement, that want to get on a win streak, that want to show the UFC, hey, one day, whether I make it to the top 15 or not, I'm someone that's going to stick around in the UFC and consistently put on the kind of fights that the fans want to see. So for that reason, Charlie Campbell versus Trevor Peak is my fight to watch. My fighter to watch is Ignacio Bahamondes. Listen, this is a guy who I still think is a very talented prospect. I think he's a very talented prospect, just needs to figure things out, just needs to kind of iron out the kinks. And most importantly, get that mat time, get that experience, get that seasoning. Because one day I do think this guy can be in the top 15. And one day I want to see him and Daniel Zellhuber. They're my two top Latin prospects in the lightweight division. Both 6'3", they got a lot of physical intangibles, and I can't wait to see them one day. So for that reason, Ignacio Bahamondes is my fighter to watch. With my friends, we did it. It's going down this Saturday, live at the Apex. Thank you all so much for the support. Shout out Betting Hero for sponsoring today's episode. Make sure you all check out their awesome deal down below in the description. Take full advantage of it. And then, guys, next week for UFC 300, I'm going to have the most epic show in half the battle history. I promise you that. So tell, I'd say hide your kids, hide your wife. No, tell your kids, tell your wife, because everybody be tuning in next week. I'm going to drop it, and I think y'all are going to really enjoy it. And if there's a specific guest you want to hear from, let me know down below. Also, please get, please hit the like button. Please hit the subscribe button. If you feel so inclined to share, I sincerely appreciate that too. And my friends, until the next time, let's cash these bets!